Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Let's rip it, Dad. Welcome to 11 Personnel. Nick Roush here with Adam Luckett on a late February Tuesday night. And oh my God, we've got breaking news, Luckett. Oh, they've confirmed that Tiger Woods had a compound leg fracture and shattered his ankle in that car accident.
Yeah, it sounded like, I would assume, kind of crushed him. If they bring out the jaws of life or what's it called?
Well, they said that initially, but apparently that was false, that they actually just they took the windshield out and pulled him out through there. But nevertheless, man, like that dude. The thing that I remember my dad always saying about Tiger, because, you know, we grew up with Tiger, and that was kind of our introduction to golf. That's why I play golf, is because I watched Tiger as a kid, would love watching Tiger. My dad, if you're like, best thing about golf, Nick, is when you get older, you can play till you're 70 years old. He's like, and that's why Tiger, he's going to be playing forever. Dude has not been able to catch a break over the last 15 years. Now, some of it was self-inflicted. You know,
yeah, I mean, but like, also he's had like 13 or a handful of knee surgeries, handful of back surgeries,
and now he's got a compound fracture in his leg. Like, thank God for that Masters, man. That might have been our last.
That's what I was thinking about today. At least we had that. But golf, you never know. Like, these guys can play for a long time.
And you can come back and get hot, but it just sucks because, like, we were going to get, I mean, Masters is like what, a month away? Pretty much,
yeah, right under 2 months. I think it's like
the week after
five tournaments away right now.
Yeah,
because you got the Players coming up in 2 weeks, and then that's like the last big tournament until the Masters.
Yeah, it just sucks. Absolutely sucks. So prayers up to Tiger. Glad. I mean, you know, it could always be worse when you're having a rollover single person crash. So glad that, you know, like all in all, he'll end up recovering, but it just sucks that our childhood icon just can't catch a break, really, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was about like a year after Kobe too.
Oh man.
Like, what was that? 2 weeks ago was like the 1 year.
Right. Right. Maybe even just a week ago. Yeah. So you're exactly right.
Just glad to hear he's alive, and hopefully everything works out with the surgery.
Yeah, yeah. Full recovery. Hope that happens. But we're starting with golf on a football podcast, oddly, because it's kind of going to be a hodgepodge little edition of 11 Personnel. Hasn't been a ton of football, but there's been a lot of other kind of little things that have been happening that we might as well weigh in on, which, like Sunday, Tiger was handing out a trophy at the Genesis to Max Homa, who had a very relatable miss on the on the 72nd hole.
Mm-hmm.
A little 3 foot yak.
Mm-hmm. And for Homa, that was a course like he grew up going to and playing. Like, that was, you know, he wanted to win that. That was the one at home that you want to get. Mm-hmm. And this, that miss on 18 just to win it. And he's hit some crazy golf shots all weekend, and to just miss that putt, but then to come back and win in that first playoff. That was pretty, pretty cool. Pretty cool event. And if golf, anybody that follows golf on Twitter, he's a pretty popular cat. He does some stuff with the fans, like just swing coach, where he kind of roasts fans when they'll sit in and say, judge my swing, Max, and he'll do that. And he's on a podcast, a pretty popular golf podcast, and he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be calling golf events probably in 20 something years.
Right.
But it was pretty cool to see him win. He's a fan favorite, and to win that way, and what was exciting into the tournament, I thought was pretty cool.
No, it especially when he's like, yeah, you know, I spent a dozen years here trying to get a high five from Tiger Woods, and right. now he's got to hand me the trophy. So mm-hmm. that's just a cool, you grew up and you made it. So shout out to Max Homa for getting the big win. I would like, what do you think the opposite? What's the opposite of a shout out?
A put down?
Yes. I would like to issue a put down to Michigan State for just wrecking parlays of mine for the last two times I've been. I'm trying like it to, we've got about a month till the NCAA tournament. And so I realized like the only way that I'm going to force myself to keep up with who's good and who's not is to just randomly bet games and just kind of feel my way through. So I'm just going to be doing little parlays from basically, I've got a nice little bankroll thanks to the Cats' big win over Tennessee. And the Michigan State just keeps messing with me. They bet against them two times in a row, and they've just crushed me the last two times. So maybe they're a stay away from team.
Speaking of put downs, we had the little video incident this weekend, and mm-hmm. I don't want to get into all that, but how many beers was that?
Ooh.
You got to think, okay, rivalry game at – what was the game, at noon or 1?
It was early, so that was probably 10 o'clock at night.
On the clip was – I don't know if you remember this Dolphins-Raiders game that night. Fitzpatrick's throwing it, and his helmet – the arm hits his helmet. So, and that was in the fourth quarter. So it's 11 o'clock. So, and they're going, and by the video, as the dogs are getting into it, they were going pretty strong at that moment in time. Well,
and you got to think too, Eric Wood, despite losing a lot of weight, dude's an NFL lineman. Like yeah. he can throw him back.
He's not a small human being. No,
no.
Chris yeah. Mack isn't either.
Right. Right. So got to be like 14 by now.
Yeah.
At least, because and they aren't drinking, you know, some Christmas ale. Like, it's slamming Bud Lights.
Yeah, they were drinking Miller Lite. I'm sure Mac had a kegerator of Miller down there in the man cave. But I tweeted this out earlier. You, me and you will get this. Some of our listeners won't get it because they're not from the area, but we grew up in this.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Mack has strong South End Louisville vibes.
Dude, it's...
I mean, strong as hell. From the bald head.
Yep, yep.
Leg tat.
Oh, man, forgot about the leg tat.
Is on record for loving Roosters. Goes, and then has a Miller Lite neon in his basement. Miller Lite neon in his basement. I mean, I get it. I respect it. I'll be honest.
He married a Holy Cross girl, for Christ's sakes. Like, she went to St. Dennis.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
the only thing that disappoints me is he lives in Lake Forest and not Park Ridge. Like, right. dude has Park Ridge written all over it.
I mean, man, it is strong. He's from here, but it is strong South Bend vibes. Like, that's a guy I see at the fish fry.
Roosters.
Every, yeah. at the church picnic every summer. Yeah. Like, I've seen him before.
He's got like a pile. He's at the blackjack table, and he's got a bunch of ones and a bunch of beer tickets just out, just loose on the table.
Swisher sweets in his back pocket. I mean, it's just Oakley
glasses on.
with the white frames. It is strong South End vibes, my man. I mean, strong.
God, Chris Mack. You know, I'm glad he's giving us something good to hate. Like, you know, because that was the same when him and Satterfield both got hired. You had two guys that came off as pretty likable. And, man, it took them no time to just find out. Like, you had Satterfield whining about L's down, and then you've got Chris Mack making new videos, like, you know, every two or three months just to take off Kentucky fans. So I love it, I'm 100% here for it.
I get what, like, Mack was doing, but – and Satterfield, he's had his instances where we've brought up. They just seem so small time on some things. Like,
They're Nerf ball.
Right.
What was that? Yeah, you're Nerf.
They both had a lot of success at the places they were at before, which were both places they went to school at, they played at, and they were assistants at before. They never left these one places. So they've been kind of insulated a little bit. And they've gotten out, and you know,
it's Mike Leach going to the SEC.
Right. They've done some stuff that they probably, you know, shouldn't have done, and they're just learning on the fly. It's just, you know, it's different at this level, more so for Mac, because that is a, you know, it's a bigger job. It's more media scrutiny. Obviously it's one of the better jobs in college basketball. Whereas Satterfield, it's more of, I think, culture fit wise with mm-hmm. Louisville and kind of thing. But yeah, I definitely think like they're both interesting in that respect. I think because they both had one school, it was their alma mater there for a long time. And then they got the big job and they just had some moments in the spotlight where it's like, what are we kind of doing here? And so I just thought that was interesting thinking about that this week.
Oh, man. You know what else is pretty interesting, Luckett, to kind of get back on the tracks and talk a little football? The people who are really smart at the NFL draft really like Kelvin Joseph and Jamin Davis. And when I say really like, I mean, they're talking day two picks for each of them. Daniel Jeremiah became the latest in among the NFL draft gurus to throw Jamin a bone. And I believe he was 35th overall, right outside of the first round. And we're just getting started with draft season. I know that, you know, you get kind of inundated with this draft stuff and there's mock boards and all that kind of junk all over the place. But for Daniel Jeremiah to be seeing the praises of both of those guys and to consider Davis 35th overall, dude hasn't even worked out for anybody yet. I mean, that's impressive. It really is.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of feedback from multiple teams on him that he's ranked pretty high on their board. So, I mean, good for Jamin, man. He had a great year. He's got traits out the wazoo. He's built like a Greek god. Yeah. He's a modern-day Mike linebacker mm-hmm. because of – it's not so much about, you know, taking on blocks in the hole, and that is being able to slip by people, shoot gaps, and get east and west and tackle in space. And he does that pretty well. And as a coverage guy, he's really good in coverage. We saw – I think he had like 4 or 5 interceptions. We didn't really see this past year, but last year as a blitzer, he made some plays, had a sack against Louisville, was involved in some other stuff as a blitzer. I just think, man, he was just kind of a slow developer, I guess, coming out of high school and such. But he always had the traits and the skill set. He just filled out there in the last year, and he became one of the best linebackers.
He got much better at understanding defensive, like complicated defensive football. And I mean, you got to remember too. So think about, because Trevin Wallace, he's going to get a lot of Jamin Davis comps because they're from rival schools. They're in the counties next door to each other. They're both, like you said, the modern kind of Mike that moves very well. But Davis was only like a 190 coming out of high school. And Wallace is about as big, maybe a little bit lighter, but he's about as big as Davis is now. So Davis had a lot of filling in to do. And to your other point, too, about him not just being like the thumper, dude had how many interceptions this year? 4? And he returned 1 for 80 yards? Like,
I think he had a couple last year. Look that up right now.
Yeah, I mean, some of those were just tip drills right to them, but like there's something to being in the right place at the right time. So I know when Davis decided to go pro, people around UK kind of were surprised by it. And, you know, I think fans were disappointed because you're losing the best player on your team. But when he's getting his praises sung this high, it's like, you know, more power to you, man. Like you did the right thing.
5 career interceptions in 3 seasons. 1 as a redshirt freshman, 1 as a redshirt sophomore, and then 3 this year.
Oh, so I mean, okay. And see, like, that I think is important as well, because a lot of people, like, your biggest critique on Jamin Davis's play as a draft person is you say, well, he was kind of a one season wonder. Like, he went from the month of November in that junior year and on, and that's it.
Lack of snaps just off the board.
him and Joseph, same thing. Mm-hmm. But to have that steady, like, he had an interception every year he played football. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and you just see the yearly growth with him too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's far from a polished product.
And Davis waited his time. He was behind Cash. He was behind Chris Holtz. And when his opportunity came, you know, he grabbed it and ran with it. I think that's a good sign. If you're investing millions of dollars in a player, you want to see that. So, man, but in a way, like, the Davis I could see because the production was there this past year. Like, he was awesome. We talked about him all season, how good he was. Didn't think he was getting the recognition he should have nationally. But Kelvin Joseph, at his top, he was as good as anybody, any corner. But, man, there's some times on tape you can turn on, and it's not great. Like, the Florida game ain't great. The Missouri game ain't great.
Ooh, what I have been surprised is that
the Ole Miss game is very bad.
The Jeremiah, I saw Jeremiah talking about the Kyle. It was more of a compliment to Kyle Pitts than it was a knock on Kelvin Joseph.
Right,
when
he just gets
dusted. But, yeah, you know, but it can be taken either way.
Jonathan Mingo for Ole Miss, who did not have a great year.
No.
Gave Joseph his lunch. I mean, he got the better of him that day. Now, he also had some moments where he made some great plays. I thought he was great against Georgia. Tennessee, he was really good. In other games, he was, you know, Mississippi State, he was really good. But, man, I guess it's just a position, man. That position is just, there's a very high variance with that position. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very important position. It's one that really values traits. Like, if you don't run a certain 40, or if you're not hitting a certain, you know, speed level, you can't really be a prospect there because you have to have these certain things to succeed at that position. And Joseph, I think, just has those certain things. And you look at the size, the frame, he can come up and make plays and run support. And he's got the speed to, you know, run with big, fast receivers. I mean, I get it, but like, there's kind of like first round buzz with him right now with like Mel Kiper. And I'm just kind of like, I'm kind of taken aback by, not that he was going to be picked. I thought for sure he was going to get picked. But I was thinking like fourth round, because there is, you know, why did he leave LSU? Then you've seen some scouts bring that up a couple times this week. At least I have. Mm-hmm. There's some maybe character concerns there that you're going to have to do your digging on that. But man, I'm kind of surprised by that. And I did some research, Nick. If he goes in the first round, he'd be the first secondary player ever from Kentucky to be a first round pick.
Man, they've had some good ones too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do think it helps him that his strength is probably playing to the field as a one-on-one guy, just because he is so physical. And when you go up against those big dudes, like he has the body type to go up against it. But, you know, he played a lot of zone at UK, and I think that certainly developed him his all-around game. So I would think that's at least a benefit working to his strength, is that there's at least tape that shows he can do a little bit of both, you know?
Yeah. I'm wondering if maybe he's just, you know, he needs to be a cover, you know, a team like the 49ers who run cover three, or like Pete Carroll. That's kind of what they do. They run cover three and they try to get good pass rushers in the front four and rush the passer. I'm wondering if maybe that's a better scheme fit for him than maybe just run and bump and run all game, because that's what Kentucky asked him to do. And that's something he did, you know, pretty well, obviously. But man, I think it's just a position. I think I learned a lesson myself that when evaluating this position for the draft, it's just traits at that corner. Like, mm-hmm. if you got it, you know, and you get a few interceptions, you make a couple plays, you get something on tape, they're going to take you and just take a chance with you. But man, I've just been kind of scratching my head on this last couple of days. I just kind of found it kind of crazy, but I guess I need to get better at evaluating corners.
Speaking of something kind of crazy, there's something crazy coming to the city of Louisville, like it.
What's that?
Some might even say it's extreme. Extreme. Indoor Football League is coming to the Yum Center. The Louisville Extreme will be playing their home games at the downtown arena. Starting at the end of April. I think it's like a 9-game season or something like that. They got teams all over the country from the Spokane Shock to the I should pull up some of these team names. But like it on your on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for the Extreme?
I'm worried that that's going to cost the city money, let alone to go. But have you been to arena football game, Nick?
Oh, I used to go to Louisville Fire games all the time back in the day. Because the hell, half my family worked for him. Jeff, that was his first coaching
game. That's right.
Greg, he was in like management there. And then we also did, they were real big on the, you know, like fundraiser type games, you know? So like, you know, we'd have the whole school show up, that kind of deal. So we went to quite a few Fire football games and I enjoyed the hell out of them.
Here's the thing with those. Like when they were going there for like what, 10, 15 years, Arena League, like those games were like, you could see like, you could see how it'd be fun. People were going to the games.
They were well attended. Drunk.
Yeah, yeah. And having fun. And the Arena Bowl was like a thing there for a little bit. But I the Yum Center is so spaced out that it feels like it's just kind of too big because it's very spaced out. But I don't know. I mean, it feels like is this the league Johnny Football was in?
No.
Or was this something different?
This is okay. He did like that Your Play football stuff that like Timmons was in back in the day, where you basically download an app and you pick a play for them to call. And they might call it. One of those kind of deals. Where this is kind of like the old school Arena Ball.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. So yeah, I mean, I it's probably not gonna work, but
two, like it is, you need some names to draw, and they've got some local guys, but the only name I recognize was Drod Holloman, which, if y'all remember Holloman, great at picking off passes. He had 14 in the season for Louisville.
Right.
Not great at tackling.
Exactly. Nope.
Dude had wanted no business of having to tackle somebody, which I feel like is probably a negative in this kind of league. So, you could see yourself like, under normal circumstances, take pandemic out of it, being like, oh, it's $20 and they got $2 beers at the Yum Center. Like, all right, I'll go to O'Shea's and then head on down and watch the Extreme and just watch some people bust some heads for a little while.
Yeah, if I was more of a downtown goer.
If you work downtown or something, never working from home.
Maybe.
The nickname, too, is god-awful. Like, you could not get anybody in that creative team to think of something more Kentucky than Louisville Extreme and then slap a horse head on one end of the X. It's
the classic Kentucky move. Just throw a horse on it.
I mean, some of these nicknames are so bad in this league. We've got the Tucson Sugar Skulls. What the hell? A sugar skull? You eating that? The Quad City Steam Wheelers. Not Steam Rollers. Steam Wheelers. And then the one that is cool is the San Diego Strike Force. I'm pretty sure it's named after the military they got based there, where they've got the, you know how they have like the shark's head painted on the end of those fighter jets? Those are pretty cool. That's pretty dope. But aside from that, this is going to be a venture that I think, to make the matters even worse, like they're playing indoor football when it starts getting nice outside, like in May. I mean, what's going on?
Do you think the XFL, if COVID didn't happen, could have worked? It seemed like it was kind of working.
I think it was working better than most for the first year. The biggest problem it was going to run into, I think, was year two. Because they were going to poach guys. Like you saw the PJ, what's his name?
He was on Teddy the Panthers. Brick. He came in and won a game for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was Bridge the best Waters player.
Back up. And then the guy from the Redskins, or excuse me, Washington football team, like
Taylor Heineke.
Yeah. He came from that. So, like, it worked for some of those guys. And I think if they could have kept finding guys, it could have worked. But I think people were like having the ESPN partnership and getting, you know, Diana Rossini and Cole Cuba, like Tom Hart. Like, I think it had pretty decent roots. I just wondered about its staying power.
Yeah, you don't know long term, but it felt like it was working. Like I was watching it every Saturday. not so much on Sunday, but Saturday I would throw it on a TV, or if I was hanging out with friends, we were sitting at, you know, back when we sat at bars and stuff.
Have a bunch of TVs on.
Yeah. Throw the, can we throw the XFL game on? Like, we were paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Hell, I remember being at the combine, and this was pre-XFL. This was Alliance, and they had a snow game in like Utah, and it was just magnificent to watch that on a Saturday.
The Alliance night. Didn't work, just they didn't have the money. They went broke.
Right.
But like, it seemed like the XFL, they had a Fox contract, they had an ESPN contract. People were getting into it a little bit. I mean, I don't know. You never know, but I think that if you're gonna have a football league, like, because that's what we're kind of talking about here, you have to do it then. I think they personally should have, instead of right after the Super Bowl, when that's when they started, I think, like, give people 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then
just
go
a little bit of time, just to make them want football.
Then go into March to June kind of thing before it gets too hot, I guess. All right, but if you could play indoors at places, you could play into July. I think that could succeed. Now, the money thing is just a big, like, paying these guys and coming up with the money.
Mm-hmm.
Because not many people are going to go to these games. Like, it's going to be more of a TV product. You have to emphasize gambling, I think.
Yeah,
you have to find some way to be on, like, the cutting edge of that, I would think. But I think there's definitely a path for it in some way or the other to have that kind of a league and have it be successful. It's just figuring out how to do it.
Now, here's my question to you. How much attention are you paying to FCS football? Did you check any of it out over the weekend?
No, not this past weekend. We had a pretty busy weekend, but I am going to plan to try to watch a game or two, or some of a game or two this weekend. I need to look at the slate still. But yeah. I am going to try to watch some. Did you see what happened in New Mexico State?
No, but I saw that Coach Prime won by 100 million. Yeah, okay. It was that was in. As bad as it sounds, that's really the only person that's drawing me to it is because he's at HBCU, you know?
Well, yeah, New Mexico State played a team that just moved up from D2 to FCS. New Mexico State's playing like 5 or 6 FCS games because they sat out last year because New Mexico's regulations wouldn't let them play games in that New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to this Tarleton State, who is the team.
Oh, they lost to the Billy G team, the Tarletons?
They lost to them by like 50.
Oh man. So they are the worst team in FBS.
Yeah, right. It was like, Kentucky's gonna win that one. I'm looking at the schedule Saturday right now. To see
what we got.
Wofford at Chattanooga. I might peek on that at noon.
The Terriers.
Kentucky plays Chattanooga this year.
I believe that's Chattanooga's first game as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, North Dakota State plays at Southern Illinois. I don't know if Southern Illinois is any good.
Salukis are a great mascot, although I don't know if I've ever seen a Saluki dog in real life. I don't even
Coach
know
Prime's
what
it
would look like.
Coach Prime's at 3 o'clock on ESPN3. Disappointed there's not a 10 o'clock
after dark
window.
Yeah.
I don't know. Murray State plays at 3 on Sunday. May turn that on. So I don't know. I mean, there'll be times where I'll turn it on. Like, really, North Dakota State, maybe I would pay attention to it a little bit. It's football. I'm probably going to throw a game or two on, but I don't know if I'll pay super attention. When the playoffs come, maybe.
Because
that's when it gets a little more interesting. That's going to be in like May when there's nothing else on.
Yeah. And right now, too, is. You know, Kentucky beats the snot out of Tennessee. You know, the college basketball juices are flowing. You're starting to get the CBS games and you hear the dun 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 dun.
I'm starting to get like excited for the conference tournament. I didn't think I would.
Yeah, I didn't either. That, you know, kicking the shit out of Tennessee, it'll work wonders. It's the best drug in the world. Which, my God, to just Tennessee fans we can't go a podcast without talking about them because they're the most insufferable humans in the world. Who died and made them college basketball powerhouse? They act like they are God's gift to basketball. They've been to one Elite Eight, and it was under Bruce freaking Pearl. Like, why do they act like they are such a college – they're so entitled. It just – I can understand it in football. They've won national championships. They've been good in our lifetime. They had Peyton freaking Manning as a quarterback. But to think that they are this, oh, we're going to go in and beat Kentucky because that, like, who do they think they are?
I mean, you said you understand football. I kind of throw it back as like, we talked about this already, but they won all this stuff with General Nealon, you know, before 1950. They were an 8-9-1 program. They had a 4-year run with Peyton Manning, but that 4-year run has set their expectations for this last, you know, pretty much our entire lives, these last 2 decades. They think they should be on the same level as Alabama. I don't understand why they do it. I used to just wonder why my grandpa like did not like Tennessee and Indiana fans. Like growing up, like he disliked them more than Louisville.
And I get it.
And I never really understood it.
I totally get it now because we didn't have to deal with them when we were younger either.
Yeah, Indiana. I don't really because we don't play them at all. We don't pay attention much to them. But I totally get it. I understand it.
Bob Knight, I can get to in because we played him every year in football.
Right.
Tennessee, like, man, that one good team they had with Pearl, too, where they had all the dudes who didn't know how to wear headbands. Remember mm-hmm. that? Like, Wayne Chisholm had his, like, a yarmulke. Tyler Smith had his, like, over his eyeballs. Like, they
the Adidas sign on, like, the side of his head.
Stephen Pearl, who was just the ugliest human to ever walk the face of the earth. My God, that team, I hated them so much. God.
Yeah, I mean, and then that.
And then they had Chris Lofton, too. Like, they took mm-hmm. one of our guys. Just, yeah. It's so good to beat them in Fulky and his stupid face. God, that's what you get for cutting your hair. It's like Samson and Delilah. Like, yeah. Why would he ever cut his hair? He lost his superpowers of being a doofy guy that just pissed the hell out of every team they played.
I was thinking about that game he had last year, and now he's just, you know, you don't even know he's on the court watching the game on Saturday.
No, you don't at all. And we're in the weird spot, too, like it were hell. A month ago, we've been like, whew, good thing Kentucky doesn't have to play this week. And now we're like, need more Kentucky basketball.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, look at COVID year is probably going to hurt Kentucky basketball more than hurt Kentucky football, right?
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, I think it seems that way. Even though Kentucky had a disappointing season, like I talk about, it's all about how you end in football. Mm-hmm. That's the one difference in basketball, because basketball, 364 teams go home pissed off. One team goes home happy. In football, you can build on it into the offseason, and Kentucky finished a good way, finished with a top 25 win. And so I think, and then what they did recruiting-wise, I think helped too. Build on some of the momentum. So yeah, I definitely think.
Well, and I think we can also rationalize not being great in SEC football when, you know, you've got to play at Alabama, you know, and you played against that Florida offense that's going to have God knows how many draft picks, you know?
I think maybe the expectations were a little too high going in this year. I think there was a lot more belief in the quarterback position just as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And there probably should have been. Everybody walked in that last Saturday in September thinking they were going to go down there and beat Auburn. And I think that, you know, turns people off when they didn't. But, you know, it's not always, how many wins, it's who you beat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time, Nick, and you smoke Tennessee on the road.
Right.
You smoke Mike Leach at home. You know, you play two top five teams in Alabama, Florida back-to-back. I just think people in their minds, you know, you ended it the right way. You beat everyone you're really supposed to. You know, but I think people get that, and they understand it's a weird season. And at the end of the day, what we're going to remember this past season for was holding Mike Leach without a touchdown. We'll be talking about that for 40 years, and then beating – Tennessee and Neyland 34-7 and just beating them dominated up and down the field.
Yeah, man.
Right.
And if there's one thing I think we've learned for both teams, it's that we don't value beating up on bad teams enough. Like, I understand that people want to play in the Chick-fil-A kickoff classic, the opening week of the year. I understand that we want to play every damn college basketball powerhouse every single year. But beating Monmouth and Utah Valley State and Eastern Michigan in football, beating up those teams in November in basketball, there's so much value in building confidence for college kids. Like, it's not quantifiable, but there's so much value in getting some early momentum in learning how to play together as a team, because unlike the professional sports, there's no preseason in any of these. I mean, you get a couple exhibitions with basketball, but you don't know set rotations. Like, you're finally seeing Cal tighten up to about 7-8 guys now, where he kind of knows. We had no idea who this team was until halfway through January this year, because they missed out on 8-9 games in November. BJ Boston, that shooting slump he had where he just didn't have any confidence at all, why did that can get out of the way in November? There's just so much that you miss out on. I know when I talked to Q and Bohannon, you know, they didn't like playing any of those bad teams. It's hard to get up for them. But having those wins that are just bankable matter so much more, because overall records, like, you're 8-9 wins this year in football, and in basketball, you're finishing above 500. And if you do well in your conference tournament, you're going to get in the NCAA tournament because you got some quadrant one wins. Like, and your name is Kentucky. It makes a night and day difference in the world if you can just bank some wins against bad teams. And I know people think, like, oh, to beat the man, you got to be the man. It's like, well, do that later. You can still beat the man, but you got to beat up on some slouches first.
Yeah, with basketball, just because Kentucky's so young, they need those 8-9 games that you're talking about to, you know, for lack of a better term, figure stuff out, figure out who you want to be, figure out how to play with these guys. It's a lot of new different parts, you know, just – and then bonding too, because you got a couple weeks there where it's one game a week and you're practicing a lot, and you're just working on stuff to get better. And also, I think the coaches have a calendar too that they stick to every mm-hmm. year, and that changed this year too, which didn't help. From football, speaking directly to Kentucky controls three games every year. They play a 12-game schedule. They control three of them. It's their three non-conference games. Kentucky has had one winning season in the SEC since the 70s.
Yeah.
So you, in those three games you schedule, you have got to get wins. You have to. And I think that's a very important strategy for Kentucky. You have to build in wins. You build in wins, then you build confidence. You build in wins that allows you to get a better bowl game at the end of the season. Yep. Then when you have that big,
doesn't matter who it's against. We're not playing to get a better seed in the bowl. Win's a win.
Because we've talked about in the past, like, how fun it would be to go to, like, play a home and home with Virginia Tech or Iowa,
West Virginia,
Michigan State, whatnot. But I also think it's better to just play those teams in a better bowl game in December and January.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, get the 100%. Wins. Get the wins. Get the home revenue. Let's drink more beers in the parking lot in Lexington. And I think when you're playing the SEC, you're always going to have, you know, fun games at home. Like, the reason why the SEC is so fun is the home schedule this year.
Man, it's great.
Like, it's
great.
Give me who has a better home schedule in all of college football than what Kentucky's going to have this year.
It's going to be awesome. Which, by the way, season tickets now on sale. And already got to turn down one wedding invitation. So very excited about that.
I got one Vanderbilt game, though. So it's a road game.
Yeah, mine's South Carolina. At South Carolina. But it's a relative. It's one of Brooks' relatives. They'll be fine. There's a couple more that are a little bit more important.
The Taylor's friend got married. It was a Tennessee game. I can't remember which one it was, but she was like, "Adam's working. he's got to work the game for KSR." I may or may not have been working.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, now those are the best when you can weasel you out of weasel out of the
which by the way, weddings. So you can schedule weddings for bye weeks. You can't schedule the birth of your child. Or can you? Neil Brown is proving that you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have your children. You can be a family man and also be a college football fanatic. Because our man Neil Brown, last week was birthday week at the Brown house. There were not one, not two, three birthdays for his kids, all within 4 days of one another. And oh yeah, they're like one's 13, one's six, and one's nine. So they're all spaced out. My man has found a way to only have kids between National Signing Day and spring football. And lucky, we just gotta give that man a round of applause.
It's a skill.
I mean, I thought I was timing it out, but
Neil has figured out the secret of life
after the Final Four. But my God, to have him the same week, it's almost like every year they're like, "Well, we can try, and if it doesn't work, well, next year it is." I mean, there's and more power to him, man. That's incredible.
That is kind of remarkable. I'm just trying to think. My family, like me and my brother, are 2 weeks apart.
Oh, okay.
But no one, I don't think anyone else is that close. I think it's pretty spread out. But yeah,
it's impressive, man. And especially to the, because there's all the college football reporters who got in on it. They're like, man, I wish I had that accuracy. Like one guy was like, yeah, I did well with one. The other one was Labor Day weekend. So Neil Brown, expert planner, precision planner, no doubt about it. I'm trying to think what else was there anything else exciting around the college football world over the last week or so? Like it,
nothing crazy. I mean, Tennessee, Saturday down south, our friends over there came up with that little chart. Tennessee had led the SEC with transfers, 25. I think Mississippi State was second at 14. Kentucky was last, I think, at 5. No,
yeah, only at 5. No, that number's 20, gonna grow.
Yeah, 25 is a lot.
A lot.
It's getting we mentioned college football season not having much dead period. This is kind of the dead period. Spring mm-hmm. practice has not really started. We're really kind of waiting on that. Signing day's complete. And then we don't know, like, are they going to have camps this summer? If they're not having those, they're not covered. That's going to allow things to be pretty quiet. So yeah, we'll see. I'm very anxious to go ahead and get the spring practice started. So we'll have some information.
I think that's why they did the, this is Rivals ranking week, which shout out to Rivals for stretching out new rankings an entire week of content. Like that's why
this is a good time to do it. That's smart by them.
That's why they're the pros. So, but they released their 2022 rankings, their 250 today. And Keonti Goodwin actually was in Gavin Wimsett's old spot at number 54 overall. Gavin's down to 60th overall. Goodwin is – it was one of those things where – excuse me. They had – there was a time where it was like, oh, no, is this kid – is he going to fall by the wayside? And then he lost 126 pounds.
Yeah, he looks good.
In a year. He's playing now. He's not in the Kentucky rankings. He's playing in Southern Indiana, Charlestown High School. But he's one of those that I'm going to be fascinated. I mean, there's so many factors in all of this.
It smells like Ohio State.
But through it all, like he's just been hanging around Vince a lot. Vince has been hanging around a lot with this kid. So, like, you know, I'm
to me, that's a recruitment. Like, I think Kentucky's got to get that stretched out as far as possible.
Yes. And they got to hope that there aren't like officials or something, you know? Like,
well, even if there are, just hope this kid takes his time, doesn't rush, does five, maybe officials, you know, over the summer or into the season. Because if he goes early, he's going to go to Ohio State or something. But if it stretches out and they start to fill up a little bit, they might get a little selective and then
Yeah.
You can have them there. I think that's best case scenario. But the problem is, man, when these kids get so highly rated and he's going to be top 75 prospect, maybe in top 50 when it's all said and done.
And he's been getting this kind of stuff since he was in eighth grade too. Right.
It's just hard. You know, we've seen it's hard for Kentucky to hang on to these kids when Alabama and Ohio State, specifically Alabama. Now Ohio State's on that level too. If they're going to really want him, it's going to be hard.
Matters how much they want him. But like I said, Vince is going to be hanging around the whole time. The whole time.
You know, I was looking this up the other day. To my knowledge, at least, Vince Merrill's never had a top 100 recruit.
Lynn Bowen was not.
Lynn Bowen was outside. He was like 164.
And Jagger. I mean,
he was right outside the top 100. I didn't even think about that. I was more thinking, I guess, Ohio.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I guess Jagger would be the first. Jagger was top 100, right?
He was right out. He was like 120. So he was right outside. I mean, we could give that to him for sure.
It's also a crock of shit that like Jagger was a top 100 until like after signing day. And then they just knock him down 20 spots. You know, the classic, let's give one more recruiting update in February to give the Blue Bloods a huge
recruiting bump. I'd have to go through and see. In the composite, Jagger was 138. I'm pulling up my little spreadsheet right here.
Like Salmonelli was 91st overall when he signed, but then in his final recruiting rankings, he's like 150 or something like that. You know, it's just kind of a crock.
Now, Kentucky hadn't had a lot of top hundreds from the composite. Justin Rogers, obviously. And I think Landon Young were the only two. So it's not like it's happened a lot. I'm just saying, Vince, he's going to get one eventually, I would reckon.
Yeah, definitely. And something of note, so I think Keontae, I think his legal guardian is Chris Vaughn, who runs Aspirations Gym, which most of the local kids who are big-time prospects work out there. The UK guys of note are Wandale Robinson and Carrington Valentine. So UK's gotten some guys out of there.
That certainly guys helps.
They'll have went elsewhere. So something to keep in mind. And also Keontae, hell, I saw him at a camp at UK like 4 years ago. Dude's been around forever. So it's kind of weird that he's finally here. Like this is finally his time. And now recruiting is for all intents and purposes shut down. So weird time for recruiting, but Zach Gagan, he's been on the phone calling people and there was something that I found really interesting in one of his conversations. Ty Bryant is a kid to keep an eye on. I found it pretty weird that like Cisco, his dad, who played at UK in the 80s, just never ever talks about his time at UK, which I mean, Ty even backed it up and said that, but it's so hard for me to believe that it would never get brought up. But from a UK standpoint, here's, I think, the most intriguing thing from all of this conversation so far. It's not what was said. It's what was not said. And that's when he was talking to Johnson Central assistant coach Justin Arms and being himself and asking about other schools and who else was involved. For the longest time, we've heard this was a two-horse race, really, at the front of the pack. While other schools were kind of starting to come calling, it was Notre Dame and it was UK. Notre Dame didn't even get mentioned. Well, I can't.
Did he get an offer from Notre Dame? Do we know?
I thought so. I'm just hearing from the wrong folks because I haven't really, I haven't dug in as deep. But like,
here's the thing with Notre Dame, Nick. They vet Kentucky pretty hard. Like, they put out a lot of early feelers on a lot of these guys. And you see in the Wimsett
recruitment. Yeah, he's got a Notre Dame offer. Okay. Yeah.
In the Wimsett recruitment, they're a player. Yeah. Michael Mayer. Lando Bartleson.
Yep.
They dig in pretty deep to Kentucky. So a lot of these kids do hear from Notre Dame. And it's competition we don't talk about a lot, but it's a deal now that you have to deal with, and it's like Wimsett's a big one on it.
Glasgow, is that right?
Or that sounds right.
Alabama.
Oh, you're thinking of Bowles?
Yeah,
he's Alabama. Yeah.
Oh, Lost one to no, no, I got him confused with Notre Dame or Alabama.
And then who was the kid in J.J. Weaver's class and Wandell's class down from Bowling Green that went there to Notre Dame? Jacob Lacy.
There we go. That's okay. That's
yeah. Like yeah. Now we talk about Alabama and Ohio State just like we did, but Notre Dame is they're somebody Kentucky has to deal with, and I think the Wimsatt recruitment is really going to be the first one where we really kind of pay attention to it. And that's competition that Kentucky's got to fight for. Devontae Robinson, they tried to get, you know, they're in Kentucky a lot more than we realize.
The funny Devontae Robinson story. He ran a stupid 40-yard dash at one of UK's camps, like 4.29 or something, just unbelievable. And it's all people were talking about at the camp. And I don't remember if it was Drummond or if it was Roland. Somebody tweeted that out, and the folks at UK were very upset that they got out. They didn't want anybody to find out about it. And then, naturally, Notre Dame comes calling shortly after that. But they were able to hang on and get Robinson, now in his sixth year at UK. Hopefully, Kentucky's able to hang on for Wimsatt. I know we talked about that, right, about the kid who from, like, New Jersey that – Cohen put some feelers out on that.
Steve Angeli. Yeah, I think you wrote about it. I don't know if we brought it up.
Yeah, I wrote it. But essentially, Notre Dame's kind of all in on that kid. If they get him, that opens the door for Wimsatt. I will say that the real hot name on the streets right now, I wonder if he's too hot for UK's liking, is Drew Allar.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking that too. That's the guy, you know, you wouldn't be surprised Notre Dame gets in on. He's blown the heck up. His tape's pretty good. I watched it about a week or so ago. But I thought that was a good offer by Cohen. I thought that was a good sign. Like, he offered that kid pretty early, right when he started to blow up, got in there, was one of the first ones to get in there. So that was a good sign. I don't think Kentucky's going to get that kid. Like we said, I think Wimsatt's probably the guy, and I think they do end up getting him. But I think from Cohen's standpoint, I thought that was a pretty good offer by him. Getting that tape, getting on it, getting the offer out, getting a relationship started.
Yeah, UK was in the first like week or so. Right? I think them and Penn State were two of the first.
Yeah, they were back to back, I think.
And then it's been like a dozen ever since then. And the kid's got, he's like 6'7". He's big as hell.
He's huge. And it looks like Ole Miss just offered him 4 hours ago.
Yeah, he's pretty popular.
Yeah, just Kentucky offered him, or Penn State offered him on January 30th. Kentucky comes on January 31st and gives him an offer. February 1st, Michigan. February 1st, A&M. February 4th, Washington. February 12th, South Carolina. Always late to the party. February 12th, Indiana. February 21st, Georgia Tech. February 21st, Illinois. Wishful thinking there, Mr. Bielema. And then February 23rd, Ole Miss. So, yeah, I mean, you just see he's blown up. And then it gets to the point where all these guys are missing on their top QB targets because all the blue bloods are starting to get their guys. And then it can get pretty fierce for these, you know, the next level quarterbacks. And I think that's what you're seeing with Lar, his recruitment blowing up here.
The Athletic, Ohio State's athletic beat writer, talked about him as the fastest rising prospect in the country. So that's one of those that keep an eye on him. I do think Kentucky's in a great spot for Wimsatt. I don't know. He keeps things generally pretty quiet.
I do think
UK's in a really good spot with him.
It feels like they're going to get him. It feels that way. I don't like. I know Notre Dame's a big, you know, a big program or whatnot, but they're not exactly quarterback whispering over there.
No, not at all.
It feels like they're gonna get them.
Yeah, I'm getting fired up like it. Getting real fired up. Did you see the? I know Nebraska and Miami were schools that Bingham mentioned that were starting to reach out. Did you see? Got another guy from Lincoln coming to the Commonwealth. A young McCaffrey. Was it Dylan or Luke?
Luke.
Luke McCaffrey, former Nebraska quarterback, transferring to Louisville. Is that do you get worried that a McCaffrey could take Kentucky down?
Luke McCaffrey is skinny Nick Fitzgerald.
Oh.
He's
that worked out well.
He's very limited as a thrower, as a passer.
You mean the guy who has thrown one touchdown and six interceptions in his career is limited as a passer?
Yes. But he's a very good athlete. If you put him in the right scheme where you can, you know, heavy run scheme and with some QB run, I think he can be successful, which is kind of what Satterfield wants to do. You know, for Louisville standpoint, that's about as good a talent they're going to get. When he come, you know, coming out of high school, he was a top 300 recruit. So, I mean, for Louisville, I get it. But Louisville's got an interesting experiment going on. Shea Wirtz, who was Georgia Southern's quarterback, he just transferred to Louisville. He's going to play receiver. And then they got this McCaffrey kid who they could easily, if they get him clear this year, he could play at receiver and do some jet sweep stuff and whatnot. So definitely some interesting think tank stuff going on there with Scott Satterfield.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So, man, what are we going to do with all this free time this week? We don't have anything to have a Kentucky basketball game.
No, watch some golf, I guess, man. It's not warm enough. Can't get out there and play yet.
Soon. It was warm enough today, but it was.
Yeah, you could have played. I was thinking that on lunch. I was like, man, I should maybe take a half day, go out and get nine in.
But way too soggy, though. You know, right. Like all that.
Yeah, you got to get melt. That. Yeah, you got to let it all dry out.
You ever tried the simulators out?
I have not. Yeah, I know you just went. How was that?
It's a lot of fun because you don't have to spend all your time chasing down your balls or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm into that.
and there is, you know, when it gets in your short game, it can be, you know, they aren't as good in that department. But once you get the knack of how to play simulator golf, because it's just going to have a different feel. Like,
right.
I got to remember that my ball is in the rough when you're hitting off the same mat every single time. But
yeah, that's a good point.
I was playing well at the end of it, though, because you can get so many holes in. I mean, we turned the automatic putting up. So we played in 4 hours, 27 holes. And it was BYOB, too. We were slamming them back. It was a great time. That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's a fun, it's different, but it's a fun little afternoon. So
I think that would be the hard part, like you said, because every swing is different. So you have to think that, you know, especially if you're hitting off the same mat, you know, what kind of lie you have.
But. Yeah. Like one, I thought it was broken, but really my ball was wedged under a rock. And it took me, you know, like 17 cuts just to get out of there. I was sweating by the time I finally got off the damn tee box. But still, you know, hell, a bad day of golf's a great day of work. You know, better than a great day of work. So
yeah, amen on that. Yeah, I've never tried those out, but definitely interested.
Did you try out a fish fry on Friday? Like it was the first Friday in Lent.
We did not. We're going this Friday.
It was. The drive-thrus is great tasting fish, but just not.
You did that fish fry ranking thing last year, right?
Yeah, and we only got like a month's worth in. It was disappointing.
Yeah, because COVID hit.
I got to tip my cap to your St. Rita.
St. Rita's good.
Is it the Mustangs? Is that what you are? Very good fish. Horrible sides, though. My God.
Yeah.
Get somebody
sides
with
sides are not
class.
Great.
St. Paul's sides, I tell you, I had to wait an hour. And we were kicking teeth. It was, you know, they're working the kinks out, huge crowd for that first one. But their coleslaw was top notch and their onion rings. Not only best onion rings I've ever had at a fish fry, maybe best onion rings I've just ever had, period. I mean, real thick breading. It didn't fall apart on you when you took a bite. I mean, Mike Lennings, watch out. St. Paul's coming for that ass.
Yeah. I mean, St. Rita, the last 4 or 5 years, their fish has been strong.
Notch, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're going to try Gabriel.
I've heard very good things about Gabriel. But I've also heard that Gabriel gets their fish from another place. Like,
it's been a couple years since he had Gabriel, but last time I didn't love it.
Like, is it Hungry Pelican? Is that place still open?
Hungry Pelican's right across the street.
See, that was the word on the street, was that their fish is actually Hungry Pelican fish. So can we even include them in our rankings?
Maybe we go both places, get a fish sandwich and try it out, see if it's the same or not.
Blind taste test.
Yeah.
But we did have to put a hiatus on our fish fryer tour around the city of Louisville, because part of the rankings is ambiance and, like, you know, how cold is the beer? Is there pool tabs? Do we got bingo going on? How about a cake wheel? Like, very important things to have at a fish fry. What was really funny is we got a new guy producing our radio show, Luckett, from Indiana. We were talking about fish fries. We're like, you ever been to a fish fry? He's like, oh, I've been to fish fry. But he was like, oh, they serve beer at fish fries? We're like, oh, dude, you've never been to a fish fry then.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits of Catholic upbringing.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Good stuff.
You're around the Bud Light pretty early.
Love it. Love to see it. Well, hope you get to enjoy a good old fried fish sandwich, even if you aren't one of them good old Catholics from the city. Nothing like a good fried fish sandwich on a Friday night.
Yeah, it hits different on a Friday night. For sure. And the Girl Scout cookies. Have you got your Girl Scout cookies yet?
See, like, it, that was, that's why I gave up for Lent, man. I gave up cookies.
Oh, man.
That's like an idiot. and they've been, the new Girl Scout cookies are freaking amazing.
I've been pacing whenever I see delivery man comes, hoping they're here. Well, I saw Peter Burns tweeted out. He's like, I did it, guys. A whole sitting in a box of tagalongs. Then like 6 hours later, he's like halfway through. He's like, oh, it's happening again. And I totally relate to that. As soon as I get it, I'm down in the whole thing. It's not going to stand a chance.
They only put like 20 cookies in there. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like you're eating a lot. Now, my question to you, Luckett, top three Girl Scout cookies.
Tag along one, Thin Mint two, and then, see, I'm not big on Samoas because I'm not a coconut guy. Do-si-dos are plain. I'd have to think. Three's hard. I have two that are the go-to.
Give me your third.
I did like the s'mores one they just came out with.
They charge an extra $1 for it, and that just had a principle. Just ticks me off.
Off top of the dome, I would say that's three, but there may be another one out there if I could do some research.
I will – my top three – so I've been very anti-coconut before, but it's not very coconutty. Like, all of the things that I – like the texture of coconut that I usually dislike
– that's the one
doesn't
thing.
Have that.
It does. Everything else about that cookie's top-notch.
But it doesn't, there's not enough of it for me to dislike it. And last year I had Samoas for the first time, immediately number one in my power rankings. Just, where have you been all my life, Samoas? I've missed you dearly. So they're number one, then tagalongs two. Thin Mints can kick rocks. Mint chocolate is disgusting.
I think frozen Thin Mints are just,
see, frozen tagalongs kiss. Too are, you've got to put your tagalongs in the
tagalongs place. Frozen are good. Have they're you ever
so good
Reese's frozen? I just did that for the first time a little bit ago. My word, what have I been missing? I've been missing out on this my whole life. What have I been doing?
I would put Do-si-dos at three though, just because the peanut butter, it's nice. I used to like the
trefoils,
the little shortbreads as a kid, but those are boring as hell.
Yeah,
so. I'm gonna make myself go without them this spring. What an idiot!
Good luck, man. I couldn't. You're a better man than me.
And you know what? You all are better men and women for listening to us. Kind of go all over the place in this podcast, but you know what? We weren't meant to talk football all the time, all year round. And it's fun to kind of spread our wings, let them fly a little bit.
Hey, if we want to talk, how many beers is this from a drunk video? If we want to talk fried fish, if we want to talk Girl Scout cookies, and you can, you know, just sprinkle in a little bit of football, I can go all day. We could get into fast food rankings, best fast food items. We could get very deep. Best drunk food. We could get very deep in this.
Whew. Well, the good thing is the off season, it ain't ending anytime soon. I guess that's technically the bad thing, but
it's fine right now. Let's just try to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then when we get in June, then we can complain.
yeah, we've got a different kind of CBS music to enjoy. And then we, you know, we just transition from one CBS music to the next. That's all it is. It's no big deal.
We're not going to have that CBS very much longer, though. Enjoy it while it's here, man.
I certainly will.
They just need to bring Vern out of retirement for the last year.
They really do.
Just turn him loose.
We're going to get Masters Vern. He'll be back 6 weeks away.
He's usually hole 16.
Can't wait. Well, like it. It's been a joy. And it's been a joy having you all listen to us. And we hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting edition of 11 Personnel.